名医学期刊《柳叶刀》最近发表了一篇重磅文章，预测新冠疫情大流行即将结束，关键时间点是2022年3月。这篇文章的作者是华盛顿大学健康指标与评估研究所主任克里斯托弗·莫里。莫里博士曾经为白宫建立疫情预测模型，他预计到三月下旬，全球将有50%的人口感染奥密克戎，可以帮助人类建立免疫屏障。今天我们非常高兴邀请到《柳叶刀》这篇文章的作者莫里博士来到我们的节目，请他来谈谈他所谓的结束是什么意思，这对采取清零政策的中国意味着什么，奥密克戎之后病毒又会如何演变。 Thank you, Dr. Murray, for being here. You said the end of the pandemic is near. Please explain what you meant by that.
Well, given what we're seeing about the Omicron wave, we think this huge wave of infection will be mostly finished by the time we get into March. There's a few parts of Southeast Asia, maybe China, which will peak a little bit later than that. And then after the Omicron wave, so many people in the world will have been infected, 50-60%, that combined with vaccination and other previous exposure to COVID means that we are moving into a new era where there'll be a much more population immunity, and future variants that come along are going to, for a combination of reasons, not be as big a challenge. And I think that will mean that governments, the era of emergency mandates and emergency measures is really coming to a close.
But right now, Omicron is transmitting so fast and infecting more people than ever. What are the reasons of hope that the pandemic will end soon?
Well, in fact, Omicron is transmitting, the intensity of transmission is so great, the speed of the epidemic is so great that there's not much you can do to change the course of Omicron. What we've seen is that from the point where cases start to surge, it takes about 20 to 25 days to reach a peak. And that's been happening in U.S. states, in countries in Europe, in countries in the Middle East, even Oceania. And so seems pretty reliable that there's about a 3-week, maybe slightly longer, 3.5-week period from beginning to peak. And it's because of the intensity of transmission that not much we can do now is going to change that wave coming through the population.
IHME estimates suggest that the increasing mask use, expanding vaccination coverage, and the boosters is unlikely to have any substantial impact in the next few weeks. Why is that?
Well, we strongly believe and have shown all through the pandemic that efforts to wear a mask, to get vaccinated, get a booster, have been very helpful and have had a huge effect. Right now in Omicron, because we're right in the middle of peak transmission, these efforts in the models don't really do very much. And it's just a question of timing. It's not that they aren't good things to do. It's just now that you're in the throes of 5-10% of the population being infected and being infectious, those measures have a very small effect indeed.
We've heard in the news that people who have been vaccinated or even have boosters are being infected. So what should we do to prevent infection, to protect ourselves?
Well, I think it's very important to distinguish between two things, protection against infection and protection against hospitalization and death. Let's start with the latter. Protection against hospitalization and death, vaccines are really good for that. Great protection, including for Omicron. That protection does wane slowly over time, but it is good. And past infection also provides protection against hospitalization and death. Where vaccines and past infection aren't so great is in preventing Omicron infection. So in other words, vaccinated people, as everyone on listening to this will know, somebody who's been vaccinated and had a booster who's also had Omicron. And that's because there is immune breakthrough, and so we are getting our immune escape. And so people that are vaccinated or previously infected are able to get infected, get a mild case, but they're able to pass it on to others. And so protection against infection with Omicron is really pretty hard. A booster helps, but it is still not as good as the protection against hospitalization and death.
So does that mean we can ease up on the COVID-19 response?
Well, I think just to be prudent, when you're in the middle of so much transmission of the infection, you know, probably the wise thing to do is to wait the 2 or 3 weeks until the Omicron wave is through your community before easing up. But the models and the science would suggest that even if we were to ease up now, it wouldn't make a huge effect because most of the Omicron wave is already upon us.
What about those who are not vaccinated and those vulnerable? Are they still facing high risk?
Look, the group that we're most worried about is the group that have not been vaccinated and have never been infected. They are the people that have never seen the virus or some part of the virus in the form of a vaccine. And they should be and will be at the greatest risk. The other groups, the ones that have, you know, got some immunity, whether from vaccination or past infection, it appears that Omicron is very mild in almost in most cases, unless you have multiple comorbidities in that case. So it's the unvaccinated, never infected that should be the most concerned about the Omicron wave.
One of the reasons that the IHME estimates suggests the pandemic ends soon is more than 50% of the global population is infected by then. So that brings the question to China. What will happen to zero COVID-19 countries such as China, where the infection rate is extremely low?
Well, this is the big challenge that China faces because China's been incredibly successful with the zero COVID strategy. Other countries like New Zealand have much smaller, but have done the same. And now with Omicron, it is a real challenge. It's so much more transmissible that trying to maintain a zero COVID strategy with such a transmissible virus seems unlikely to be successful in the long run. You know, maybe that will be able to hold off Omicron for days or a few weeks, but it seems very unlikely that they'll be able to keep Omicron out of the community, as we go out weeks or months. Same story happening in New Zealand. So in that case, you have a population that has not seen the infection before. They are vaccinated with a vaccine that's not as effective as the mRNA vaccines. So there will be some real challenges, I think, ahead.
So will China be able to avoid Omicron wave? I mean, in other words, it's just the question of time.
I think it's just a question of time. Of course, it's, we have not had a variant as infectious as this in the past. This is so much more infectious. Even casual contact, you know, walking past somebody, there have been cases of examples of transmission. What you saw in New Zealand, which had, you know, strict border controls and managed isolation, is that the virus leaked out into the community. So I think we'll see the same thing happening repeatedly in China, that there'll be Omicron leaking into the community. And at some point, it won't be practical to do mass lockdowns for so many cities and so much of China. And then you'll see a broad Omicron wave through China.
According to the Chinese government, the vaccine rate is so high in China. What do you think of China's vaccine efficacy? Would that help?
Of course, the vaccination will help. It'll help a lot. The only challenge there is that the vaccine doesn't work well to prevent infection, but most of the vaccines don't either. It's just a little bit, it's somewhat worse than the vaccine. So it won't put the brakes on transmission. We hope that the vaccination will provide protection against severe disease, hospitalization, and death. We do know from the available studies that protection will be less for the vaccines that are used in China than, for example, Pfizer or Moderna. But it certainly is a big help in terms of the impact that we expect to see of Omicron in China.
Then how should China reset its COVID-19 control strategy?
Well, since we believe eventually it will make it into the community, then I think there's really sort of three parts to the strategy that China can pursue. One is to consider, particularly in the elderly, delivering vaccines, if they can obtain doses of the vaccines that are more effective. So, for example, Pfizer. And I know that at some point there had been negotiations about getting some of the mRNA vaccines into China. If you delivered those to the at-risk groups, those over 70, let's say, that could make a big difference, even in the short time frame that's available. Second is supporting hospitals, because even though Omicron is much more mild, 90%, 95% milder or less severe than Delta, you will still get a lot of people ending up in hospital, putting a lot of pressure on hospitals if there's a broad Omicron wave. So supporting hospitals, staffing, so that they can handle the surge if and when it comes. And then the third is a bit more challenging, but you know, there's now a new strategy for controlling COVID. It's going to be an important one for the future, and that is these incredibly effective antivirals. So for example, Paxlovid, which in the trials suggested 90% reduction in hospitalization and death. And the current production capacity for Paxlovid is low, small, from Pfizer. But perhaps if China could negotiate with the relevant groups access to that drug or producing that drug, maybe China could produce it more quickly and have more antivirals available when the need arises. The timing of that may be challenging because it may be that Omicron is going to just hit sooner than any possible effort at scaling up antivirals could deliver.
Now, the whole world is watching China as Beijing Winter Olympic Games is in the countdown. So China's taking extremely tight, restrict measures such as lockdowns. Do you think the lockdown zero COVID policies will buy China some time?
You know, I think they will. I think if they keep, as they detect new outbreaks, a new community transmission, and if they really impose them rapidly as they have been, it will buy some time. So it may well be that they are able to hold off the sort of mass rapid transmission of Omicron that we've seen everywhere where it occurs till after the Olympics. I think it is going to be touch and go because it is everywhere we've seen Omicron get into a community and start transmission. The incubation time is so short, it really can explode in days.
What do you think of the costs by China's zero COVID-19 measures, such as strict lockdown?
You know, I know less about the exact details, and there's fewer studies on lockdown in China. But what we do know from studies around the world during strict lockdown is that there are real effects. So we've seen quite considerable increases where there's strict lockdowns in depression and anxiety. So that seems like a very real finding. We have also seen some of the effects a little bit harder to prove, but we've seen effects of greatly reduced use of health services, which may translate into increases in other diseases down the way, you know, fewer people getting screened for cancer or treating their blood pressure. So there are prices to pay for lockdown. And of course, one of the biggest one is, if it goes on a long time, is loss of education for children if they're kept out of.
So COVID has surprised us before. Do you think there will be any new surprises after Omicron?
I think there'll be new variants for a very, very high likelihood of new variants. And of course, there can be new surprises, absolutely. It's been a very challenging virus. But let's say there's a new variant. It will, to replace Omicron, it has to be more transmissible or have more ability to infect people that have been vaccinated or previously infected. So that's called immune escape. So one of the two to replace Omicron. And the big question will be, will there be new variants that are more severe than Omicron? And that is certainly possible. We don't know. If it comes out of the Omicron lineage, it won't be. If it comes from a different lineage, it might be. Now, let's say the worst scenario comes along that we have a new variant. It's able to either infect lots of people that have protection or is more transmissible and it's more severe. Are we going to be right back to where we were with the Delta outbreak? And I think that the hope here, or our view, is that we won't be. It won't be as bad as Delta, because so many people will have had some exposure to the virus, either through infection or through vaccination or both. So even when there's a new variant, if your immune system has seen the virus and diverse parts of the virus, we think that protection against death and severe disease will be much greater than if you've never seen them before. So as time goes by and the population keeps getting exposed to COVID-19, there'll still be infection. There will still be people who get hospitalized and die. But we don't think it will be like, let's say, the Delta wave and the millions of deaths around the world that occurred with that. And add on to that, if we scale up, which eventually will happen, the production and access to the antivirals that reduce the death rate by 90%, then we really, even a new, more severe variant may look far less severe than seasonal flu.
So there is encouraging news from Pfizer. Pfizer's Omicron-specific vaccine that is expected to be ready to use soon. What do you think? Would that be too late? Should we chase the variants in the future?
Look, I think the Omicron-specific vaccine probably won't make a big difference to this Omicron wave. We do think Omicron, if some other new variant doesn't come along, we do expect another round of Omicron, particularly as immunity wanes and you head into winter in the Northern Hemisphere. So our models would suggest, when you run them out a long time, a return of Omicron as those two phenomena come together, seasonality and waning immunity. So having a booster that's specific to Omicron at that point will be useful. It's not without use. I don't think it'll have any effect on the current wave, because it just won't be enough in time to make a difference. And I do think, as we look ahead, we will be in this game of trying to, keep up with the virus as new variants emerge. Omicron's really tough because it's so fast that it's really hard to imagine you can scale up a vaccine in the time frame to actually stop this wave going across the world.
So does that mean after Omicron, we'll return to our normalcy? Should we still wear face mask?
I think that we will see, as case rates in April get to very low levels in many, if not all, the world, that there'll be a pretty rapid return to, quote, normal life. As people, both because we won't need the protection at that period of time and because governments aren't going to enforce it and people are going to be wanting to return to normal. I think the bigger question is, when we come back to the next variant or the winter wave next year, will people want to wear a face mask? And I think people that are older or have comorbidities may choose to. I just don't, I can't see governments requiring people to do that.
So what about test?
I think the test, contact trace, quarantine strategy, which has been the mainstay of China, New Zealand, Australia, until they let Omicron break through, has been, mainstay of control strategies. It's worked well when the volume of infection in the community is low, so that you have a reasonable probability of finding an infectious case and their contacts, and you can isolate that transmission from the rest of the community. When you have something as fast and as transmissible as Omicron, it becomes pretty much infeasible. So in the future, in the next variant, the question about whether testing, contact tracing, and quarantine will be a key role, will depend if the next variant's spreading because it infects people with some vaccination or past infection, or because it's more transmissible. And either is possible. Now, we need good testing capability, contact tracing, and quarantine, not just for COVID, but for future pandemics as well. So public health agencies, government capabilities to do that are a very important part of keeping us safe for the future.
So what are the most important lessons we learned from this pandemic?
Oh, well, you know, I think we've learned many things. If we go back to January of 2020, when, January 5th, when China, followed the international health regulations and alerted countries to the possibility of a new infectious outbreak, there was this very long period of minimal to no action taken by most governments. Some governments in Asia acted, but most governments in the world didn't really act. And it wasn't until, substantial action until Italy put in mandates in Northern Italy at the end of February. So I think one lesson is you can't wait when you have a real risk like this. You need to act sooner. And then another lesson learned is you need to be able to scale up your testing, because early in the pandemic, you could have isolated transmission, testing, contact tracing, quarantine capabilities. And we also have learned a very important and hopeful lesson that non-pharmaceutical interventions, mask wearing, social distancing, can really work. And they can work well. And if you deploy them early, you can contain an epidemic. The other thing we've learned is the importance of, genomic surveillance so that we can detect around the world when a new variant does emerge. And if we can detect it sooner, then you can use strategies to stop it spreading and contain to local transmission, as opposed to if you find out, we find out about Omicron and probably it's already spread to 50 countries around the world at the time that we find out about the new variant. There are many other lessons as well. I think a lot of governments and scientists are really trying to think about what are the actions we can take to make us safer in the future. But I've covered some of the major ones.
Thank you so much, Dr. Murray. Do you have anything to add?
No, I think we've talked about the main issues and why, Omicron, after Omicron's over, we should be able to move out of the sort of emergency phase and into handling Omicron or COVID like so many other diseases that we have to live with and figure out how to minimize the harm from.
Thank you so much, Dr. Murray. We really appreciate your time.
Happy to talk to you. Thanks. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. 非常感谢华盛顿大学健康指标与评估研究所主任克里斯托弗·莫里的分析和解答。来宾发表的都是个人意见，并不一定代表美国之音。感谢您收看《时事大家谈》，我是叶凡，下次节目再会。